post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to the Near Post. My name's Eamon Flanagan. We're talking football across the Australian Community Radio Network, and we love talking football. Michelle Bertrand is with me in the studio. Michelle, Australia's greatest fan. How are you?
Good evening, Eamon. I'm very well, thank you.
And Russell Gibbs is back as always, a goalkeeper, goal scorer extraordinaire. 17 goals this season, 17 more than Nicky Carl, but also Australia's number two match commentator in the whole of Australia. Not a lot of people know that, Russell.
Not a lot of people know that. Much, but glad that you're back there driving it, because I couldn't get that interview to work last week. I have no idea what happened.
Well, I probably won't get it to work either, but anyway, we'll give it a go. Okay, so what have we got? We're going to talk about the World Cup bid. World Cup's coming to Australia before it goes to England, Russ, so that's good. And also, we're going to talk soccer, is of course, review the Bahrain game. And if you've, you know, sort of seen the reviews, well, we've got our own special, unique view on that. And then, of course, we'll look forward to the Japanese, the big Japan game coming up. And we've also got an interview this week, the same as last week, with young Matildas coach Alan Stadjew.
If it works.
If it works. And there you go. The young Matildas are just back from the Tour of Europe. All the big issues, quiz dedications and more. And you can email us at nearpost2xx@gmail.com or catch the podcast on the blog at www.nearpost.blogspot.com. Show dedication this week, as always, you have to dedicate the show, and this week it's a special dedication to Frank Lowy. Has there ever been a man that deserves a dedication on this show more than Frank? And he should be Sir Frank. And the Near Post, you heard it first. Never mind the Order of Australia, it's Sir
He's
Frank.
United.
I had the privilege to hear him speak yesterday at the Australian at the National Press Club, and it was a privilege. It was absolutely fantastic. We'll talk more about that later. But the quiz question this week: name the seven countries who have played Australia in the World Cup finals. Name the seven countries who have played Australia in the World Cup finals, and name the first Indigenous Australian to play in those finals. And, yeah, there you go. We're supposed to have a promo there, but as you say, Russ, things don't work on that CD. That's why it doesn't work.
That's probably why we couldn't get that interview
okay.
last week.
So, Socceroos get there first. That's the problem. So, you can't tell the difference, can you?
We could sing it.
Yeah, we could. There you go. Anyway, so, straight back to the quiz. Name the seven countries who have played in the World Cup finals. Michelle, start with you. Who have we played?
Is that in 1974, Germany?
1974 was in Germany, yeah, but who did we play?
But did we play Germany?
Oh, we did play Germany.
We played both Germanys, didn't
we? Played both Germanys, yeah.
East and
okay.
West.
So, there's two.
And then more recently, I guess we played Croatia, Japan.
Croatia, we beat Croatia 2-0. 2-2, I have to say that. We have to keep saying that.
Japan.
Japan, yeah.
Brazil.
Brazil.
Yeah.
And Italy.
And
we
Italy.
Went on to win.
That's
the,
it. There's six.
So there was six.
And
there was one more.
Just one more,
the 74
isn't there,
World Cup, wasn't
it? You got it, Michelle?
No. Can't remember.
Russ?
I don't remember.
Chile.
Was.
Chile.
There you go. And, of course, the Indigenous player. First Indigenous player. Was also... Another claim to fame for him was the first guest ever on the Near Post show.
I was thinking I had the name Harry Williams.
That's
in my
it.
Mind. Is
it's
that
right? Yeah, Harry Williams.
Oh, yeah, well, surprised myself.
And he was part of the World Cup launch on Saturday, Sunday at Parliament House, of which I wasn't allowed to go to. But hey, I wouldn't let me into into it either. So another good decision by the FFA. They're making good decisions all around every week. So we're going to.
Well, if the bid fails, it's obviously because they didn't let you in the door, Eamon.
The bid. No, I don't agree, because the bid won't fail. Because I heard Frank speak yesterday, and the bid will not fail.
To the cup, the Near Post will wish them luck. The Near Post will wish them luck.
That's good. You see, we've got the promo played, so I'm happy now. I can relax. Okay, well, let's go for the news. What have we got? We've got heaps of news.
Legends. Well, I'm going to start with the W League because...
Hang on, I'm going to start with a rumour.
Well, you want to start with a rumour?
Yeah, I've got a rumour.
Okay.
The football superstar has rumoured to have been won by a camera boy, apparently, Luke Pilkington. You didn't hear that here? Go.
You didn't hear that? You might have ruined that.
No, I wouldn't have.
I was going to start with the Canberra United W League coach was announced today because I'm into the old W League, as you know. Ray Juna is the new Canberra United coach, former assistant coach at the AIS and all-round great guy. Been there forever and a day. Done some work with the Australian under-17s and under-20s as well. So Ray Juna is on board and we'll probably talk a lot more about that in the local show.
Yeah, and thanks to Mr... who gave us a plug on the Sydney Fans Forum. He's just known as Mr. and he said our show was on. So that's good. Well done. Thanks, Mr.
Well, thanks very much, Mr.
And luckiest player in Aussie football, Shane Stefanuto, gets the start against Japan at the G.
Yeah, I don't know why. Who wrote these notes?
I don't know.
Felipe walks out on the Fury. He's off to the Middle East or somewhere for more money.
Carvalho's team, Grosseto, crashed out of the Serie B playoff. They lost 4-1 to Livorno, so Carvalho will not be playing Serie A next season, unless, of course, he gets a transfer.
And as we are camera-based, not just with the football superstar rumoured, every rumour is camera-based, all the bids from Western Sydney are gone, apparently. There's reports saying that there is no money in any of the three bids. So, and the FFA, on a different note, CEO Ben Buckley did say at the National Press Club on Monday that Canberra had a very strong bid. So I guess we'll watch this space and see what happens in the next few weeks.
And what's that I hear about Harry Kewell being tired in the Celtic Shunsuke, what's his name?
Shunsuke, I should have spelled it right. Yeah, Shunsuke Nakamura is also tired. So the two tired lads won't be playing in the Japan.
Come on, Harry.
Australia. But we don't need Harry.
No.
Harry's really done his bit.
We've got Nicky.
We have Nicky.
Okay. We've also got Josh Kennedy, but rumour is he's going to be defecting off to Nagoya Grampus 8.
Josh Kennedy can't score, though.
No, well, they'd be suited to the Japanese football, I think. World Cup bid is up and running, and Frank Lowy gave an inspirational speech at the National Press Club yesterday. And anybody who doesn't think that we're going to get the bid, what? You've got better knowledge about it than Frank? Marmon is on Frank. So he's an inspirational guy. I mean, just listening to him speak and his logic, yep, I think we're in. And I think, like Frank, we're in before England. So that's good news. Young Aussie 18-year-old Adam Moy is cousin of Jets Brodie Moy. But Adam is in Bolton and he's hoping to break into the first-team squad in Bolton next year. And he's had big raps from none other than Ned Zolic, who watched the team play in the under-18 tournament in Holland recently. And Adam was the one that stood out.
The Central Coast Mariners are going to play two games in Canberra, including a doubleheader with Canberra United and the Mariners women's team. I know they're playing the ACT President's 11 at the AIS as well.
And an international under-15 Tri-Nations tournament will also be set for the capital city in October.
Any idea who's in that?
Australia. But I don't know.
two teams,
I have no
and
idea.
And, of course, Japan is playing Australia on Wednesday at the MCG in Melbourne.
They are. Are you going?
No, I wish.
From Perth, glory
to the Central Coast, from Melbourne victory, hear the Queensland roar. This is the Near Post, going coast to coast.
The Near Post, get there first if it's for football news that you thirst. The Near Post, get there first.
Now we're talking World Cup. It's World Cup week, but not just World Cup games. Australia obviously qualified for the next World Cup in South Africa, which is fantastic. But Frank Lowy and the FFA have launched a... the World Cup bid for 2018 and 2022. Michelle, you watched a little bit on the TV. What were your thoughts?
Oh, it gave me goosebumps. I can't wait. Hopefully we'll get the World Cup.
No. Now, you said, Michelle, that you talked to a few people and there's been a bit of a negative response. What's all that about?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe there are people who don't really know football or how far it's come in Australia. And they all say we won't get... there's not enough support in Australia for football.
Absolutely.
Won't get the World Cup.
Well, they're joking, aren't they? I mean, but that's okay. Look, we don't have a problem with that. I mean, the Olympics, a lot of people would have come out and said, oh, well, we don't want it. It costs too much money. And then a lot of people say, yeah. And, of course, with the other codes, they say there's not enough support. And, you know, as Frank Lowy pointed out, there's a million people playing the game. I mean, I don't know how much you need. And, obviously, the number of people that would come from overseas, ridiculous. So what are your thoughts, Michelle? Can we turn those people around or do we need to?
I think we will. We will once we get the bid really into... Once we really get into it, and I think we've got a really good chance.
I think we do. Russ, as an Englishman, can I say that? What are your thoughts? I mean, obviously your heart's torn here between your failed English bid that's on and the great Aussie bid. I think this is a way to play it before you get into it, Russ. Just, I think, you know, a lot of people said, oh, you know, there are some people out there saying, oh, no, Australia can't do it. But I reckon if you put it, what? You think England can beat Australia? I reckon every Aussie will be on board straight away.
Exactly. If you play it up as the ashes of the World Cup bids, then I think everybody would be backing Australia. I think they're going to get the World Cup, whether it be 2018 or 2022. Both countries. It'll be shared. One of them will get it in 2018 and the other one will get it in 2022, whether it's Australia first or England first. We'll wait and see. But I think that's the way it's going to be. And it'll be great because we'll have Brazil, England or Australia, Australia or England. Three great World Cups in a row.
Now, Frank's a very clever man. No one would doubt that. And he put it quite simply. You know, people have said, oh, no, we can't possibly get it, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, basically, we just need to win the nominee of Asia. And we're up against teams like, or countries like Qatar for 2022 and South Korea. And then I think probably Indonesia, etc. So I think in the short term, if we win that nomination, and you'd have to think that Frank will be able to win that nomination for us. And then basically we're up against an America and European nomination. So people are saying, oh, you're up against Spain and England, but there's only one Europe, isn't there? And there's only, they're not going to take, if they, even if they took the 2018 to whichever European country won it, let's say England won it, mm-hmm. or Spain, we'll say England won it, if they get it, then it's not going to go back to Spain.
No, it's not. You're quite right. It's got to go. That's why I think a European country would probably be in the running for the 2018 bid, because obviously we're going to South Africa, then Brazil.
Africa's out. Africa's gone.
So Africa's gone. I would have thought then. And then
South America's gone.
South America's gone. So we're probably going to get a European bid for 2018. Is my thoughts, and just in the way that it's worked in the past. But then obviously 2022.
Now, Russ, I respect you, mate, but I respect Frank equally. Not more.
Well, Frank
but equally.
Knows more about it than I do.
Because what Frank said, he said a couple of things that stood out for me. He said, firstly, that Europe tend to think that everything, you know, is Europe rules the world sort of thing, like in the sense they don't look beyond Europe. But Frank said, well, England, you know, will do a fantastic World Cup, no problems apart from the weather. And that if you want to grow the market of football, you're never going to grow it. You're going to get a great World Cup, you're going to make a lot of money. But Frank said, you're not going to grow the market. Now, FIFA are going to be looking at Asia, and everyone said, oh, there's time zones. But if you look at the Chinese, Indian, and Indonesian population, do you think they'd rather have it in England or in Australia, given that China's broadly in the same time zone? And for Asia, when Frank said it like that, and he also said in America, if you want to go to America, the games already had a World Cup. It didn't take off the way they thought. And he said, to get TV contracts in America, for, you know, because they're all locked in with the other football codes, it really won't kick the game on. So if they took the World Cup to Europe and to America and excluded Asia, that would mean there'd be no World Cup in Asia, in the fastest and biggest growing region of the country. And he said, if FIFA want to go for growth, it seems impossible that we wouldn't have a World Cup in Asia before 2022, doesn't it?
Well, you think, I mean, there was a World Cup in Asia in 2002, wasn't there? And obviously, Japan. I think the Japan and the K-League kicked on massively from the back of that. So obviously, what Frank's talking about in terms of growth is played out by the fact that last time it was in Asia, lots more people took up the game. The K-League kicked on again. The J-League got more and more more backers, more sponsors after that. So, you know, what he's saying is completely correct. Whether or not we're going to get that in Asia again in 2018. I definitely think it is going to come here. Whether it will be 2018 or 2022 remains to be seen. As I mentioned, I think 2022 is more likely, but obviously
The Englishman in you talking.
I was going to say, let's back Frank, though. I'm quite happy for it to be here. I'm here. I want it to be in Australia. We all want it to be here. Yeah. I think Australia do a fantastic job of the World Cup, as they do for any sporting event. Look at the Olympics.
One thing that quite excited me was also he talked about 32 training venues that are required across Australia. Now, Shepparton in Victoria, of 60,000 people, have already said they want a training venue, because the countries obviously have to go outside of their just the cities where they're playing the games. So, you know, like when the Aussies played in Germany, they were in some little, I can't remember the name of the town, but it was a small town. And what it would do for the future of sport would, you know, they'd actually set up really strong infrastructure in those regional areas. And it's a great way of rebuilding the infrastructure. We've just been joined by former Bill Connor United coach, Canberra-based Steve Forshaw on the National Show. Steve, we're talking about the World Cup bid. Just grab up a pew. What are your thoughts? Give us your $5 worth.
I'm actually pretty confident we'll get 2018, but even more confident that we'll get 2022. I think, you know, on the rotation basis, probably North America would be next cabin off the rank, but Asia has got to be right up there by 2018. So I'm thinking we're a real chance, and I certainly don't underestimate the power of Mr. Frank Lowy to actually influence that decision. But if we didn't get 2018, I'd have my house on 2022.
That's good, and it's a nice big house too, so that's okay. All right. Okay. So, Michelle, what are your thoughts? You're always optimistic about everything in Australia. Russ has been a little bit, you can take the boy out of England, but you can't take the Englishman out of the boy, can you? He's gone for 2022 for Australia.
I'm going for 2018 because I don't think I can wait till 2022.
that's right. We couldn't wait. And the other good thing, and not a lot of the other codes have picked up on this, is that we'd also have the Confederations Cup the year before. And if we had the Asian Cup, which we're bidding for in 2015, well, I think some of the other codes might as well just quietly take a break. So it's all good news, but it's very exciting days. Okay, we've got an interview with Young Matildas coach Alan Stajic. Alan and the Young Matildas recently travelled across to Finland to play against Finland, Germany, Inter Milan and Thailand on the way back. And this is what Alan had to say. Okay, I'm joined by Young Matildas coach Alan Stodgick. Alan's just been with the Young Matildas in Europe on a tour. They've played Finland, Inter Milan, Germany and Thailand. Alan, can you just run through the results quickly for us?
Yeah, we had five games on tour. The first game against Finland, we won 4-1. The second one, 7-0. We beat Germany 3-0. We beat the Inter Milan ladies team 8-3. And then in the last game, we beat Thailand 1-0.
Now, anybody who's followed women's football, obviously the result that really stands out, I guess, is the 3-0 win over Germany. Did that surprise you?
It was a bit of a pleasant surprise. I wouldn't say I went into the match thinking we're going to beat Germany 3-0 today. It definitely came as a bit of a pleasant surprise. I don't think it was a reflection of the match. In the first half, Germany certainly had the majority of possession, but definitely didn't create many chances against us. I think they had one shot on goal in the whole first half, despite having all the possession. So our players really worked hard. We got Germany on a corner in the first half, and that gave us a 1-0 lead. And then the second half, we really got into the game and created just as many chances as they did in the second half, and we managed to put away a couple of late goals. And yeah, it certainly wasn't as if we were a 3-goal better side, but at the end of the day, any win against Germany is a good one, and 3-0 was definitely a good confidence booster for the players.
Certainly is. And just against Inter Milan, 8-3, a club side, how are Inter Milan as a women's club side? How are they set up? Have they got a good structure there?
Yeah, I don't think they, to be fair, I don't think they pay a lot of attention to their women's football anywhere near to the extent they do to their men's football. And to be honest, it was probably our worst performance on tour. We just travelled an hour and a half on the bus that day, and coming down from the Germany game, I don't think the girls are really mentally ready for a game like that. And the performance that day was a little bit disappointing. So we've learned a lot from that, and hopefully we'll move on and get better. Despite the result sounds good, the performance definitely wasn't.
So overall, as I say, the results, I mean, looking good for people looking back, reading them from here. But in terms of performances, you still sound like you've got a lot of work to do.
Oh, definitely. The results were great, and we've discussed this with the players, but the performances were up and down. We certainly had good patches and bad patches, and that's with throughout the whole tour and throughout every game. So, World Cup qualifiers, you only get one or two games where you really got to prove your mettle, so you can't really rely on luck. So that's where, performances and results both matter. Equal importance, and definitely the result more important, but when you're preparing, obviously performances count just as much as what the result does.
Most of these players, if not all of them, have played in the W League, so I guess, and a lot of them obviously still quite young, and with young players, I guess you see a lot of variability in their development from month to month, I guess. Is that, are you seeing that, or have you seen that the W League's really helping the preparation of the Young Matildas this time?
It definitely helped, but we had a lot of youngsters come on tour. Some came on their first tour. Courtney Butel was her first tour. Tegan Allen was her first tour with the Young Matildas, and Nicola Bolger, they'd travelled with the 17s before. But Tegan Allen, who's only just turned 15 this year, ended up being a starting player in the team and was probably one of our most consistent and best players throughout the tour. So you're exactly right. Their performances do vary from month to month. And I saw the best part of the whole tour was that I saw improvement in nearly all of them. And I know that we'll need to improve a little bit more to compete against Japan and North Korea and all the other good Asian teams.
Now, we've got a lot of followers of the women's game, obviously, now, and also with the W League. Some of the players, Alan, who you see are really taking a big step further in their development, who we can look forward to seeing play in W League. Who are the sort of three or four players who are really standing out for you?
Yeah, probably our two best players, or probably two or three really, really key players, are Kai Simon, who played for Central Coast and is in the Matilda setup at the moment. She's got fantastic ability and can just turn a game, on its head at any moment, and plays up front for us. And the other one's Tamika Butt from Queensland, just really quick feet and gets up and down all day and, just has that little bit of explosiveness and energy which you sometimes need and sets her apart from most other players. And then the third one is Casey DeMont in goals. The pleasing part also is Sian McLaren from Adelaide did really well, so our two keepers performed really well, but Casey's a standout goalkeeper, and if we get to the World Cup, I've no doubt she'll be one of the best keepers in the world by the time we finish the World Cup next year.
Fantastic.
And that was Young Matildas coach Alan Stodgick.
That was Young Matildas coach Alan Stodgick. Alan, just back from the tour overseas, and a successful one but in results terms, but obviously he had a few concerns. Now we're talking Socceroos. one of our favourite topics, of course. Michelle and Bahrain, we did them 2-0. What are your thoughts on that?
It was not the most exciting game, but still 2-0. That's nothing to sneeze at.
No, that's right.
And Harry Kewell is looking pretty good.
No, we're talking about football, Michelle. We're talking about the football. Yes, but we do like Harry's new cut, as they say.
A new cut, yeah. He was looking very cut, apparently, according to the commentator last week.
It's okay, Russ. You can let it out there, mate. We know you're attracted. Now, Russ, you're not so happy with Australia.
I was disappointed in some aspects of the performance. I was disappointed in that they went one up front again. And if they're playing one up front, I don't think it can be Scott McDonald because it's not the game that he plays. And the poor boy can't buy a goal at the moment. Kenny had a great chance in the first half, blazed at it a bit.
He lost Celtic at the Championship.
Well, he needs to wear a hoop shirt, I think, underneath the gold one. Because he seems to be able to find the net with regularity for Celtic, but for some reason. And I do think it's because they're playing one up front, but the striking resources were a bit slim last week, so...
Steve, anybody do themselves out of a World Cup berth based on that performance?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I agree with the comments that have been made previously that it wasn't the most spectacular of performances, but certainly in the second half, I thought when Grella came on, the game changed. And
changed, I agree, yeah.
And they started to play well. I think McDonald's in trouble in terms of a starting 11 spot. I mean, it's not just the fact that he's not scoring.
No.
His general game just doesn't seem to be...
I agree.
Standard.
He's not a starting 11 man, is he?
No.
Millie Jedinak, I mean, it's an interesting point you make, Steve, about Grella coming on. And, I mean, Jedinak's played a couple of games against China last year and again this year. Oh, I don't think he's up to it. I mean, you can take the boy out of the Central Coast, put him in Turkey, but you can't take... We've used that one before, but, you know.
I think Millie Jedinak is a handy player to have if you're really not trying to lose games, because he will make those tackles and he will break play up. But in terms of creating, I think one of the most disappointing things about the Qatar game and the Bahrain game was that out of midfield, we didn't create a lot. And maybe it's time to revisit the Nicky Carl.
We've got a Nicky Carl special coming up next week. We're going to have 27 minutes non-stop Nicky talk, so don't mention that word, Steve. But I think that's the point that everybody's making, isn't it? They're criticising the style of play. I mean, I still remember the days when we never qualified for anything, so I don't care how we play, to be honest.
And
from a football world that if you win, I'm happy. And there's always another game to improve. And we're at the World Cup. But, I mean, Australia, the debate's changing, but we're quite a critical audience, I think.
I think it's a matter of how far we've come as a football nation.
Well,
we could have been playing like this and losing, and then we could have had something to complain
about.
That's
right, we would, wouldn't we? And, and the way the results have gone, I mean, we could have easily lost a number of these games. So, but, I mean, the attacking style of play is, do we have the players? I mean, Bozo made the point on TV that we don't have anybody other than Scott McDonald who plays in the Champions League. And if you don't have anybody who plays in the Champions League, can you really expect to produce a team with the most interesting, creative, stylish play? I don't think you can.
I don't think you can create Brazil out of Australia. You're never going to do that. I mean, Brazil have had 150 years of football culture to be what they are. But you can certainly have a look at being a little bit more inventive and a little bit more creative going forward.
Well, do we have those players? I mean,
we don't know until we actually look at the rest of them, the Jittes and the Carls and one or two others that might come in that... could actually change the style of play. Even it only has to change a little bit to actually have people.
It does.
Clapping.
I think a lot of people wouldn't mind seeing Scotty McDonald playing up front alongside Josh Kennedy, and we haven't seen that yet. And he does play very well up front off of a bigger target man like he does at Celtic, as you know, Eamon, with Venegor of Hesselink.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see him now that, I thought now that would have been an ideal opportunity now that they've qualified to go with two up front. Yeah, they're probably not going to play with two up front in the World Cup unless they need to. And at one stage in the tournament, they're probably going to. So I think it'd be nice to see him play two up front and see how you go from there. But I agree with what Steve said about when Vili Grella came on, definitely up the tempo. The passing was a lot sharper and slicker.
I don't think we're good enough to play with two up front, because as soon as you put Kennedy and McDonald, well, that tends... I mean, what do you use just Kennedy for? Flick the ball up in the air, I mean, that's the flick on. I mean, that's the oldest style in the book anyway, isn't it? Let's face it. Flick it on to Kennedy and then hopefully McDonald gets around the edge. And I think if you play two up front, then the reason Australia has done so well in this... is basically the defence and the midfield. As much as we hate having all those players back there, your Valeris and Iguerellas, we've needed two midfielders because, one, I don't think the central defence is strong enough, and two, I don't think the midfield is strong enough. So they kind of go for that insurance policy. And in international football, we said how lucky they've been really along the way. Now, if we'd have had two up front and maybe Grella on his own, I think we would have been walked over.
But
what do you think about that?
But do you not think that they need, just throwing it back in, do you not think that they need to have, if they're going to play one up front, they need a player that's going to hold on to the ball? And I don't think Scott McDonald is that man.
Well, no, I agree with that. Now, so back to your point then, Steve, we bring in Nicky. And we may be bringing him in tomorrow night. They're talking about Wednesday night against Japan. Harry can't play because he's tired. There's a whole... Well, I mean, he is. I mean, he's tired. He's done a lot for us. He's got us to the World Cup. That's good enough for me. I'll give Harry a break. Marco Bresciano, Scott Chipperfield, Luke Wiltshire, Carl Valeri, Chris Coyne, Britt Holman, David Carney, Mark Milligan and Mille Jednak are all on a yellow card, so none of them are playing. But that's OK.
Yeah, I mean, it's an opportunity. Japan won't be at full strength either.
No, Shunshuki Nakamura, the Celtic player. We have to mention Celtic 10 times on this show. And he's out. And also Endo's also out. So, yeah. You know. But
And I think the stand-in skipper's doubtful as well, isn't he, with flu? Not swine flu, apparently, but some other form.
Yeah, Yuji Nakasawa, he's got the flu. So, yeah. I
mean. Look, I'm not a great Nicky Carr fan, I've got to say. But
my God, you're sitting next
turn
to
the microphone
Michelle,
off.
Who is the world's greatest.
But I think the sort of player that he is now probably something that Australia needs to experiment with.
Brett Holman,
look, he's probably coming to the end of his chances. I mean, he does provide pace. The point you were making before about playing Kennedy and McDonald together is a valid one, except that they're both not quick.
That's
and
right.
I think that's what Verbeek looks at.
What about Rukavica? Maybe giving him a go?
I think over the next 12 months, the likes of Jitte and Rukavica, particularly based on pace and nothing else at this stage.
Yeah, that's right.
They're a chance. They're a chance of actually establishing themselves. If Rukavica can get a few goals in Holland, establish himself in the first team, play some reasonable football, he's a real chance of going to the World Cup.
He certainly does. Nicky Carl really needs a good game tomorrow. He's under a lot of pressure, poor Nicky, isn't he? Because everyone's watching, you know, watching for him to do it. It's not an easy game.
Darling, isn't he?
They are expecting miracles from a player that does play for Crystal Palace, though. I mean,
not a lot of people know that, I don't think, do they?
It's not as if he's turning on in the Premier League every week. I mean, give the lad a chance and let's see how he goes.
So he's only going to be so good. But, Michelle, you can have the last word because I know you're a huge Nicky fan.
I think when Nicky came on, he really changed the game for me. Well, 10 minutes of it.
There you go. Well, next week, as promised, Michelle, you won't be with us, I don't think, but we're going to have 27 minutes. The whole national show is going to be devoted to Australia's most finest football talking point, Nicky Carl. And I think it's well deserved. It's about time we have a player who actually, you know, you're either on the Nicky side or not, because often you hear about the other codes and whether this guy, but it's about time we had a player in football who really divides us and brings us to a talking point. So it's going to be 27 minutes of Nicky. Should Nicky Carl go to the World Cup? And we'll find out next week, no doubt. Thanks for coming in, Russ, Steve and Michelle, and good luck to Australia tomorrow. And if you're going to the Near Post, Nicky,
get there first.
Near Post, get there first. The Near Post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The Near Post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the Near Post, get there first.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's it, Steve. Steve Forshaw, former Belconnen United coach, and is still with us. Russ Gibbs, you're still here. That's great. Michelle Bertrand's left. She's gone home because we've insulted her about Nicky. We didn't give her enough Nicky talk, but there you go. We're going to talk local football now. There's a heap going on, as always, in the middle of a season with 17,000-plus players running around. Russ, where are we starting?
I got a little bit of local news. We'll start with the present 11 train-on squad, which has been announced, and with training commencing on Wednesday the 17th, which is tomorrow, at Canbar 3 at 6 o'clock, with the head coach, Jason Dunn. He's named a squad of 27 players, as I said. Six from ANU, two from O'Connor, six from Belconnen, three from Olympic, seven from Canberra FC, and one each from Woden Valley and Tuggerong United, and the solitary non-Premier League player from the Cooma Tigers, who's Daniel Gechik.
The World Cup bid has been launched, and it was launched in Canberra. And Ben Watson, the former Majura and Radford College student, is, if you see the TV ad, he is the boy that passes the ball onto Kevin Rudd's desk. So Canberra doing it for the country.
Tuggerong United's Stan Mitchell was recognised for his outstanding achievements in coaching performance in front of a packed house at the inaugural Australian Football Awards in Sydney. Mitchell claimed the National Boys Coach of the Year Award at the presentation ceremony last week.
Carl Valeri, bad news. His team, Grosseto, went down 4-1 in the playoffs in the second leg of the Serie A playoffs. So, unfortunately, they won the first leg 2-0. But Carl's team don't make it to the Serie A because they lost 4-3 on aggregate. Three players sent off, just like in the local game, which we'll come to in a bit.
Certainly will. New Canberra United coach has been announced today. It's former AIS assistant coach Ray Juna, a former NSL player with the Canberra Arrows and Brisbane City. He has a massively long CV, been involved in elite football for more than 20 years, was an AIS scholarship entrant in 1982-83, was AIS scholarship coach in 1995, ACTAS head coach, AIS men's football assistant coach, video analysis for the Socceroos at the Asian Cup, the Australia Under-17s Tour of Japan. It goes on, and hopefully we'll get him in at some stage in the near future to talk about all the great players he's coached and seen through the AIS, including people like Brett Emerton, Vinny Grella, Lucas Neal, Milis Dojovski, Carl Valeri, Bruce Gitte, etc., etc. It goes on.
It does go on. And any more? Steve, you got anything, Russ?
Yeah, get behind the A-League bids. I'd like to make a point that there's still foundation memberships and corporate foundation memberships available for you out there. So get involved if you haven't already got involved. And if you have, get other people involved as well.
And we're getting a little bit excited because, if you haven't been listening to the national show, as mentioned, it looks or rumours are that the three Western Sydney bids don't have any money, which is good. It's good for Canberra.
A-League by process of elimination.
Well, I think that's always been the way it's going to be going, isn't it, Steve? I mean, they've been waiting to see. Now, no guarantee that you know, somebody's not going to come in, or maybe the rumour's wrong, but, you know, we love to deal in rumours because we're a radio show. But, yeah, so maybe Canberra will get the nod and perhaps get a provisional licence, and then with another 3 months further on, assuming we've got all the money that we need, we'll get the full deal. So you never know. Fingers crossed and all that. Be good.
We appear to tick all the boxes.
That's right. We do tick all the boxes. I mean, the money's always the big issue for everybody. But, I mean, we're way ahead in terms of all that other stuff that you have to do, you know. So, and the FFA said that at the meeting when we met with them in March after the Socceroos game. They said, you know, there is nothing more we can ask you to do. So all you got to do is go and get some more money, I suppose, because you can never have, you always need more, don't you? But in terms of anything else, they, you know, there's nothing else. So they realise that we're way ahead in that sense. And the other thing for me that's interesting is whether, if they did give it to Western Sydney, what are they going to do with the Canberra bid that ticks all the boxes? Are they going to say, no, this region can't have a team? So, you know, it's good. And with the World Cup coming up yesterday, Frank Lowy, inspirational, absolutely inspirational. And you sort of thought, you know, from a personal point of view, when I sort of got involved in the bid, I thought, well, when the World Cup bid was coming together, you sort of think, well, when they start announcing that we're going to have a bid, a launch of a World Cup bid, how can they have a launch in Canberra without the Canberra community having the opportunity to take advantage of it by having an A-League bid? Now, if we didn't have an A-League bid on the table, they'd be here in Canberra going, oh, we're going to this U-Haw, we're going to have a World Cup bid. And it's like the capital city, and we're going, yeah, but we don't have any football here. No. Professional.
The timing's perfect for Canberra. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And you know, just qualified for the World Cup, get the bid on the table before the World Cup, A-League bid, ticking all the boxes, you know, our own fault if we don't make it.
That's really right. And 2 weeks after the World Cup, we'd have a team on the park. So, I mean, how fantastic would that be?
You know? I might get the boots back on and play.
Get them back on, Steve. You'll be first up on the team, mate. I don't know what position we'll have you in, but we'll have you in there. Hey, Russ is the striker and I'm the left back.
There's three of us in there.
That's right.
We got any goalies out there?
Well, we don't have much of a salary cap. We're salary, so, you know, we'll be cheap, won't we? Okay. What are we going to talk about? We're going to talk...
We're going to talk men's Premier League, but before we do, still like to reiterate what I mentioned last week for people that are listening. We are out there trying to find out who has scored the most goals in junior football or in any football this year so far, because I mentioned last week that Eamon's daughter Eilish has scored 24 goals in 6 games. Did she add to the tally on the weekend?
No, coach put her in goals.
Put her in goal.
Heard
on the
it on
weekend.
The radio and said, right, that's it, kid, you're in goal.
In goals. Crushing the dream.
Bring him down a peg, that's what we
said. So we'd like to hear from anybody out there, that any young people or anybody from any grades in men's, women's, boys or girls, how many goals you scored this season, and, you know, we'll make a little tally up.
So there you go, 24 in 7 is the way to go if you're up there and scoring. Now, just we've got a heap of scores we're going to fly through, and then we're going to have a chat with Steve Forshaw about many things. Very quickly, go for it.
Men's Premier League? We'll start with the Men's Premier League, and we will chat about this game in just a minute because it was a top-of-the-table clash. Belconnen United going down 2-0 to Canberra FC. John Glass with a brace, but that's not the story. A-League referee Ben Williams sending off a trio of Belconnen players, Ian Graham, Matt Valeri and Dustin Wells, receiving their marching orders. We'll chat about that one in a minute. NU 1, Canberra City 1, Adam Dobell for Canberra City, Tom McLaughlin for ANU, Queanbeyan City 4, Woden Valley 3, Zach Knight, Goran Josefowski, Dean Tomeski and Dane Georgievski for Queanbeyan City, a Lucas Cole hat-trick to no avail for Woden Valley, and the surprise of the round really, Canberra Olympic 2, Tuggeranong United 5, young striker Dale Westmore with a hat-trick, Kale Bedrotta with a penalty and Mark Shields for Tuggeranong, Scott Barzi and Robbie Schroeder for Canberra Olympic, leaving the table looking like this. Belconnen United from 8 games have 19 points. Canberra FC have 7 games. They also have 19 points. The only thing keeping Belconnen above Canberra at the moment is goals four, as both have goal the same goal difference. ANU in third on 14, Canberra Olympic on 11, and then mid-table O'Connor and Canberra City on 8, Toggen on 7, Queanbeyan 6, and Woden Valley bringing up the rear so far with 5 points. And the leading scorer is David Lee, unable to add to his amazing tally of 16 so far this season, keeping him in front still.
OK, and the Women's Premier League results, Brooklyn United 0, Western Creek 2, Sarah Crittenden and A. Tupper, the scorers. ANU Women lost to Canberra FC 3-0, Aitchison got 2, and Ayana Aitchison, I think that is, and an own goal. Bellworth Foxes 1, Jay O'Brien lost to Woden Valley 5, Catherine Brown 2, S. Rojan, if you know these players' names.
Yeah, Sally Rojan.
Yeah, G. Field.
Gracie Field.
And
Ashley Palumbi.
Yeah, good on you, Russ.
Yeah, that's all right. I know everything about the women's game, you know that.
That's good. And top of the table, Woden Valley lead the way from Bellworth Foxes by 8 points, and ANU bringing up the rear. So it's Valley on 18, Foxes 10, Bocconi United on 8, Western Creek and Canberra FC on 5, and ANU on 4. Leading goalscorers are Jessica O'Brien from Bellworth Foxes and Grace Field from Woden Valley on 6, and Catherine Brown on 3.
While you're mentioning the women's football, Eamon, let's put our hands together for Canberra FC, because that was their first win since rejoining the Women's League this at the start of the year.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that is our team of the near post, so we should have known that. Yes, OK. We've got a whole heap of... the big issue of the week, I suppose. Well, first of all, I want to go to Canberra United. Before we go to Bill Connon, I want to talk Canberra United, Steve. Ray Juna is the coach. Let's talk about this. It's great to see that the coach has been appointed. But I guess I've been talking to a lot of people, as you do. The initial feelings, Steve, what were your thoughts on the, you know, should we have stuck with Robert, let Robbie Hooker get out of the way? Or what do you think, Russ? I don't know if you...
Certainly I thought Robbie Hooker was worth another season. I mean, inaugural season, put together the team very, very quickly and made a grand final. I think he was entitled to think that he would get at least another season to actually improve on the things that he'd done. I think the squad that he worked with had become very familiar with Robbie's ways of doing things, and he'd laid a very solid platform. So from that point of view, I think Robbie's probably feeling a little hard done by, and I tend to agree with him.
Yeah, I mean, people, I think I've talked to a lot of people who probably aren't in, you know, in tune with the politics of what does or does not go on at these sort of situations. And for most people who rock up there and watch the game, they're like, oh, well, you know, David Nusafora won the Brumbies final, and you know, he got the boot or didn't get reinstated. Mm. And in this case, I know Robbie didn't apply for the job, but you can understand. You know, I mean, that's a bit.
I'm not sure that that's the way to go about appointing coaches anyway. I mean, it's not a job in the public service that we're talking about here. We're talking about running a football team and a football club.
And from the results point of view, I don't know anything. Sorry, but, you know, as you say, he put a strong team together and he got the results. They came in the grand final and we couldn't have asked for better. So, I would think Robbie's right to feel a bit hard done by.
I'm amazed that when Canberra United's franchise first came out, they didn't sign on a coach for 2 or 3 years to give them a bit of stability. Robbie came in, used his contacts to bring in a superb group of players, and he's got a cracking squad he had there. Whether we're going to see many of them come back next season remains to be seen. I think he was worth another year at least. And like I say, I can't believe, Stephen, what do you think that when you're starting an entity like that, you wouldn't sign on a coach for a couple of years in terms of stability?
It's a good point. What about Ray Junior? So, okay, so before we get on to Ray Junior, has Ray been appointed for just 1 year, do you know?
I don't know if that's actually been announced, whether he's going to be in just for 1 year or whether it's been a couple of years, I'm not sure.
No,
to be honest. But it'd be interesting, because I think you need to give a guy an opportunity to build a team.
I think, in particular, Ray has come into the situation that he's inheriting from a bloke like Robbie Hooker that's been reasonably successful. So it's doubly difficult, because he's basically going to have to meld some new faces with the old faces that mightn't be all that keen.
That's right. I mean, Robbie as a young Matildas coach would have had some big sway in the women's game, wouldn't he, about who players may or may not come to the club. But
that's right. But can I just say, though, Ray, of the handful of people that are probably qualified to actually take this job on, Ray certainly well up there amongst them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in terms of his pedigree that Russ read out earlier, I mean, absolutely, I don't think anybody would say that, you know, I mean, fantastic operator, we all know Ray, we all know Robbie, I guess. So either it's not about personalities or whatever, it's just about, you know, the fact that Robbie didn't get the job, given what a good position did. But having said that, moving on, Ray's a great appointment, isn't he, with in terms of you know, he will have new challenges like every other coach, I guess. But I guess the thing, a good point, Russ, whether, you know, they should appoint him for longer to give him a
I think you've got it. Yeah, you've got it.
Yeah, well, maybe we can find that out.
No. I'd be surprised. I don't know what Miriam Blyberg's on at Gold Coast, but I'd be surprised if he's not there for more than 1 year.
My understanding is that he's going to take up a sort of a more technical director after the first season, and that Ocon will slip into the...
But he'll still be involved in the club.
He'll still be
part
of the club.
That's probably a more pressurised job, you would hope, than a shorter Canberra United season where we can really... You know, is it that important whether we win the title? I mean, we've only been one season in, and if we come fourth or fifth,
Important if you're playing.
Well, it is important, but I mean, I don't know. I think
they need to build on last year, whether or not they win it. I mean, obviously now that the standard's been set, the fans are going to be expecting the club to perform.
Yeah, but there's only two teams that get to the final. So what, the other six teams, if they don't get to the final, then the fans won't go and watch. I think it's important to build a club that actually people want to go and watch the best women football in Canberra, irrespective of...
I think, and I think they will. I think the crowd will turn up.
I think you've got to aspire to do both. You want a club that is successful both on and off the park. You want people that are attracted to the club that come and add something to it, whether they're only watching or whether they're volunteers behind the scenes or they're actually playing or coaching staff. But you don't go into a national league with an aspiration to finish at the bottom of it.
Of course not. No, but it's not an easy thing to put a team together in a few.
No.
Weeks, and now Ray's going to have a similar problem to what Robbie had, in the sense that, hey, here you go, off you go, mate, get it up and running. So.
I think that's doubly enforced because some of the other clubs will have been recruiting heavily already, because most of their coaching positions have been either filled or were stable from last year.
Well, that's right, yeah, so they've got the link with the players. And
looking at the press release, it does come with the backing of national team coach Tom Somani, who says here that it's a great coup for Canberra United and women's football to have a coach of his calibre to coach the team. He's got an extensive coaching background at elite level and playing background at elite level.
I mean, Tommy... So, yeah, I mean... But
he says he's exactly the type of person they're looking forward to get involved.
I mean,
he's not likely to say anything else.
No, but Ray's an excellent appointment, and Tommy would know him well, so he's not going to say anything.
Well, we'd like to see what he's going to do and what influence he has. I understand player registration's open very shortly, so we should be getting some team news for the build-up for the start of next season.
So good luck to Canberra United and good luck to Ray Junot. So, we're going to talk a little bit about the big game on the weekend. There's obviously a lot of football going on, but particularly one game we're going to focus on is the big game in the men's Premier League between Canberra FC and Belconnen United. Steve Forshaw, former coach of Belconnen United, you were at the game.
And, I was, yeah.
What were you, give us your rundown?
It was the sort of game that you went to with a sense of anticipation, because both teams undefeated, and I think even after the weekend, are probably the two best teams in the competition. So I was looking forward to a really exciting game. But we had Belconnen having won last year's grand final against the same opposition. There was a little bit of an edge to it in terms of...
Obviously, this is a big game of the season, Steve, for these, locally people. What was the sort of message that you would be giving the boys before they go out to play someone like Canberra FC?
I actually read Davey Leet's comments in the paper, and I would echo them, that this is why you play. You want to play in the big games. You want to be playing against a better opposition. Players don't need motivation for games like that. It's probably other games that you might have to talk more to them.
So they would have been fired up. There's been some talk about Canberra FC not being quite as fit and prepared last season, but they're a little bit more on top of the game this season. Is that your impression?
It's a little hard to say because of the events that took place, and it's the first time I've seen them play, but they looked a fairly decent sort of outfit in the over the 90 minutes. The whole thing was marred by the controversy with the three sending offs. I mean, the Dustin Wells sending off just before half-time, Canberra FC were leading 1-0 at the time, and they'd scored when Belconnen had the full complement of players. So you can't take anything away from as far as that's concerned. But the decisions to send the three players off, and I said before off-air that, you can't condone players' bad behaviour, but the referee, I felt, mismanaged the game, and it spoiled it as a spectacle. Now, that could be a jaundiced view as an ex-Belconnen official.
Absolutely, Expel Conlon, you've still got the blue shirt on.
But if you talk to some of the people from Deakin that were there watching the game, I think they probably had the same point of view.
Yeah, well, I mean, referees have good and bad games. So what were the sending-offs for?
Dustin Wells was a second yellow card, and to my mind, there were worse events took place. There were worse tackles. I mean, the second one was he put his hands on the bloke's shoulder as he ran past him and held him back, but definitely a free kick, no problems. And I guess if you want to use the strict interpretation of the law, the referee was entitled to issue the second yellow card. But to my mind, given the circumstances and the game was being played, that a talking to would have been.
Okay, well, here you go, Steve. As an exciting, dashing young player that you were, you know, was there anything worse than when, you know, often skill, like a player gets away or whatever, and someone pulls back, and we kind of let these standards slip in the sense that nowadays we go, oh, you pulled him back, no problems. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's cheating. He's gaining an edge. Book him.
But, he gave the free kick. He didn't actually stop the game there and then. He let the game play and Canberra FC had the advantage, they lost the advantage, and he came back to actually give the second yellow card. Now, to my mind, if it's bad enough to send a player off, stop it there and then and do it.
Yeah.
But
fair enough. Yeah,
but the other two were allegedly for dissent, and I thought...
Well, you can't argue that really, can you?
Well, straight reds. I mean,
straight reds. Yeah. Well, we don't know what was said, do we? I mean,
and nobody does, apart from the players. And
absolutely.
The
and... Ben Williams obviously thought it was enough to merit a red card. Now, this is a referee, obviously, we're talking about with A-League experience, with international experience.
Well, if somebody's given dissent, and assuming the ref's right, which, you know...
Were you kind of surprised the way he performed on the weekend?
I was disappointed, I've got to say. I mean, you expect a little bit more from...
But if you give dissent, you're asking the referee to make the decision, aren't you?
You are, and this is why I say you can't condone the players' behaviour, because they put themselves in a position where the referee can make a decision. As it turned out, it was an adverse decision. But you're talking about a bloke that's dealing with international footballers, A-League footballers. If that's the level of dissent that he can't tolerate, that was evident on the weekend, he's in real trouble.
I wasn't at the game, of course, but the question is it about what he can tolerate, or is it the fact that the guy's just dissent, you're off? You know, he's not. But is it a personal thing? I mean, maybe he just says, "Well,
who knows? He'll see. He will cop a lot worse in the A-League this year.
So we're talking. We're talking consistency more than anything. Then we're expecting if that's the level that they're setting, then we can expect to see a lot of cards next season.
Exactly right. But to my mind, Ben understands the rules of the game, and he's obviously you've got to have referees, and I wouldn't condone anybody that physically or verbally abuses the referee to the extent where. They feel threatened in any way, shape or form. I can't condone that.
No, but I'd take it down. I don't even need to be threatened if I was refereeing. If someone swore, I just think, I'm like, get over it. You're off. There'd be nobody left, but, you know, fair enough.
Yeah, why play?
Well, I mean, if they're going to be swearing at you, though, Steve...
People swearing at kids' primary school, in the schoolyard.
But if they swear at you as the referee, then, you know, as an adult, I mean, it's like, well...
I think this is the key, as an adult. I mean, if you can't turn around and say, don't do that, and then that stops it.
You need to have a little bit of a smile on your face.
But it's about management of the game. It's not just about the rules. It's about management of the context of the game, and that's where he failed on the weekend.
Yeah, okay. Well, they're strong views, Steve, and no doubt there's always... two sides of the dispute, so I'd like to give Ben FIFA referee Ben Williams full support, even though, you know, obviously we've got...
We're just talking about him now, but I think it's a bit of a coup for the local league that he actually does come down and referee some Premier League games. So, you know, on the plus side, that we're quite happy to have a referee.
A reserve judgment, Russell.
A referee of that quality.
Well,
and I think what with on a lighter note, he used to be related to the Tuggies club, and Belconnen are playing Tuggies next weekend, and we probably need a bit of help, so
hopefully
the three settings off, a bit of suspensions there. Cheers, Benny. The cash is in the post.
Okay, well, we're on the Near Post local show. It's 98.3 FM 2XX. I'm with Russ Gibbs and Steve Forshaw. Steve, you've retired from the first grade coaching, but you're still out there around the grounds, obviously giving your opinions on all sorts of things football, which is good to see. What are you doing these days?
I'm working with the Belconnen's under-18s in the Pathway League. I'm working with Joey Caruana, who is the coach. Last year he was the under-16s coach. This year he's moved into the under-18s position. I'm working with him.
So what does that mean? You're not out there tonight. Obviously you've come in with us, but you're normally out there on the Tuesdays
and Thursdays. Yeah.
Yep.
Really enjoying it. It's obviously a bit different than coaching Belconnen's first team, but
how
really
different? Why is it different, Steve? What do you feel? What do you find?
Well, I can't speak for other clubs, but at Belconnen, the first grade players there are fairly well equipped to deal with the different challenges that first grade football presents. They're decent players, so the coaching element of what I did wasn't as great as it is with the under-18s. The under-18s have got so much more to learn.
Sure.
When I first started, when I went back to Belconnen, it was a very young team then. I was coaching a lot more than I was when I finished with Belconnen. You could basically give instructions and know that they were going to be carried out. With the under-18s, you've actually got a shot that what's needed to be done. So I'm coaching a lot more, and that's a lot more enjoyable from my point of view.
And are you finding that the players that are coming through are as skilled as the players at the higher level, just not tactically perhaps as aware? Or
yeah, I think so. I think the depth at Belconnen is very, very good, and some of the players from the 16s and 18s are, I think, probably more talented than the players in the first team at the same age.
And what sort of players have you got? 18, it's Premier League 18. I noticed that you're top of the league by 6 points from Woden Valley, and you had a 5-1 flogging of Canberra FC on the weekend. But what sort of age are you players? Are you players all 17, 18? Or
no, it's a 17-person squad, and half of them came out of last year's under-16, so they will be turning 17 this year. But even out of last year's under-18, there's three players that are still eligible or would have been eligible for under-16. So we've got a very, very young under-18 side. We have one or two players that have turned 18 as the season's progressed, but by and large, we'd be one of the younger teams in the competition.
And how do you find the transition from under-18s to pathways? Are there players in your under-18 squad at the moment that are performing well enough and then being taken to pathways? Is that how it's working with you at the moment?
Well, our pathways team has been doing extremely well as well, so it's been difficult for them to actually progress beyond the under-18s. But with a couple of sending-offs last weekend, it might create some vacancies and some opportunities. But there are players there that could step into our reserve grade side now and wouldn't let them down. There has been a few that have had runs off the bench, played the last 20 minutes, half an hour sort of thing, and, you know, they've looked like they belonged there. They didn't look out of place at all.
I
thought I was going to say, have we got any names, any real gems that we can look out for in the future that we might be seeing in the Belconnen Premier League team before too long?
Well, I think the skipper of the side, Jack Blackley, is a very, very good young player. He's one of the older ones in the squad, but he's, you know, as well as being a tidy footballer, he's got tremendous leadership qualities and a maturity way beyond his years, and I think that he could step forward and play at a very high level if he chose to do so. And there's a lot of water can flow under the bridge between now and, you know, an elite career. But he's certainly got all the qualities that I think clubs would look for at higher levels than perhaps the local league. There's one or two lads that technically you look at them and you think, goodness gracious me, they're, you know, way above what I was when I was their age. You know, Callum Smith, who plays for us, he can do things with a football. He can almost make it talk.
Well, that's an interesting point, Steve. I mean, you know, I sort of think when, you know, I played local in the Premier League, but when I look at some of what the kids can do with the ball at a very young age, and I mean, people said I was a reasonably skillful, but I think, you know, the skill that is out there for what the kids can do is just phenomenal. Whether they're any, whether they can stick the ball in the back of the net is a different matter, but their ball skills are, I think it's way ahead of the group, the people that I used to play with.
Yeah, I don't know whether this is the right way to approach it or not, but because they've got such a high level of technical skill at under-18s, we've actually worked more on the tactical side of things with them this year.
It was the way it should be, wouldn't it? If the guys are coming through from, you know, your Bell West, your Bell South, and they're getting reasonable good coaching, and I mean, that's one thing, I guess these guys have been coached to death in the sense, well, you probably grew up playing the game on your own.
Yeah.
I didn't play a game of football until I was 11, but I mean, obviously I had 3,000 million hours before then.
Yeah.
But didn't actually play a game, whereas these guys all go to a training session, they get coached. So by the time they, you know, they get through all the curve of coaching and whatever other coaching they do, they are, you know, they're better players, they're well skilled, aren't they? Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, because we play a lot of small-sided games and we do the tactical stuff's all done with the ball, they're actually practicing those skills indirectly anyway.
Yeah.
But by and large, if we give them some sort of structure to play to, they accept it straight away, they practice it themselves, they put it into practice during game times, and it just builds a platform to let them express themselves with the talent that they bring to the table.
Now, has that changed over the years, Steve, for you, in terms of like the amount of coaching you can do with players these days, either at Belconnen in the first grade or in the under-18? You know, when you think back the first time you, I don't know what it was like, but I used to be coached by Tony Brennan, good old Tony, and we'd get the ball out and we'd have a bit of a game, and, you know, there might be a little bit of space left at the Uni of Canberra between the, you know, about six teams. There wasn't a lot of coaching going on. I don't think Tony would mind that. But what do you...
I think there's more coaching these days than there's ever been. And I think you run the risk of overcoaching. You can actually give too much structure and place too many restrictions on players, and the expressive side of the game, the creative side of the game, can be forgotten and those sort of things. And it's really about finding the balance. But in terms of good coaching, I think, you know, there's a lot of work still needs to be done at the junior level.
Oh, yeah, I would agree.
And I think even into the ACT Premier League, there are probably coaches going around that are actually going through the motions rather than actually doing the coaching.
Well, I think that's the biggest problem really facing junior football, is how you get coaches for all the... You know, we've got so many kids playing, how you get good coaches across... You know, the 17,000 people playing, it's
too
impossible,
many kids,
isn't it? Yeah.
When you're coaching, Steve, when you have your coaching sessions, do you coach the under-18s as a separate entity to the Premier League 16s and the Pathways, or do you find that they mingle during coaching sessions?
No, they're separate. We're all at the same venue, but they're separated. But we have, once a month, we go to the Polygrass, and they all train together once a month. But there's a sort of integrated approach in terms of... It's unlikely that Bell Connell will go outside its pool of players to try and bring in somebody. Like this week, if there was a shortage, and David Leach probably injured. Three players are going to be suspended. Zach Mabry's injured. So that affects your depth.
Yeah.
But they're not likely to go outside the Bell Connell pool of players to try and actually fill that depth. They'll actually promote players from below and give them their opportunity.
Yeah.
So you're likely to get some of the PPL players playing first grade on the weekend that might not have got a run. And consequently, some of the 18s will move up, some of the 16s will move up. So there's an integrated approach as far as that's concerned.
Is that common across the clubs in Premier League, would you say? Or?
Look, I think some clubs would probably look to try and find players from other clubs before they would actually look at their own. I mean, there's not a lot of depth in some of the clubs, and I can understand why they might do that.
Yeah.
But
you guys have got a huge source of...
Well, we've got a huge source of juniors because of the relationship with Bell North and Bell South.
Mm.
Players can actually be brought up. You know, if the 16s were short, we can actually go to Bell North and Bell South and bring players in and put them on the development path as well. But by and large, clubs that don't have that sort of relationship, and I think crunch time's approaching at the end of this season where Capital Football are going to have to look at it and say, well, you know, some of the clubs that are purported to have a relationship with schools or with junior clubs, that really it's only been... a relationship of convenience to allow them to play in the Premier League to show that they've met some criteria. I think that's got to be looked at a little bit more seriously.
Okay, okay.
We talked a bit about that last week, and we had a couple of guys in that were mentioning the same things. And interestingly, we had a lad that used to go to Marist, and he said he thinks it would probably take away from the honour of playing for your school, really, when you're kidding up for a Premier League team rather than for your school side. I'd like to ask you a quick question about the Premier League 16s that's come in this year. How do you think that's going to affect the flow of players? Do you think it's a good thing in terms of making them part of the Premier League structure?
Yeah.
You know, they're coming under the same umbrella now. So do you think it's obviously going to be a positive thing, but in what ways do you think we might see that pan out in the future?
I think the certainly, and I can only talk about Bell Connell, and I'm sure it's...
That's okay.
I'm sure it's the same, or the at least...
Well, people could compare or whatever, can't they, with your views?
At Bell Connell, there is a fairly professional approach to the pathway that is established by the under-16s at the bottom of the pyramid, if you like, and the first team at the top. So things like associating with the first team, training at the same venue with the first team, playing at McKellar for your home games where they can, and they won't get home games there all the time, but one or two they will. But just being around a club that can actually... help bridge the gap between what was junior football and your career prior to the under-16s and what is your first steps along the road to senior football is a benefit to the players themselves as individuals. As a club, from a club point of view, having a flow of junior players or younger players coming through helps to refresh the whole thing, gives you a new impetus going forward, and it actually creates a new challenge in terms of how you manage those players and their careers, because if you have a young under-18s and a young reserve grade, where do your under-16s actually go when they're over 16? So it can create bottlenecks, and it can create its own particular challenges.
Okay, with Steve Forshaw, Bell Connell United, we're out of time, but as Russ mentioned, this is an issue, and these sort of issues are going to go on and on, and Peter Fennell will be back next week as well, discussing these issues in some more depth, because obviously there are key ideas there that need to be explored as the season goes on. Steve Forshaw, Russ Gibbs, thanks very much. Russ, if you are going out there this week, make sure when you get to the near post,
get there first.
Yeah, don't stick it into the side netting.
Or hit the crossbar.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst. The near post, get there first.